There are some mental mediums of such rare and sensitive development that they are able to forecast and prophesy the wars of the elements by the vibratory power which a storm carries before it. For whole days together, some of these sensitives will feel the great and wearying depression of a storm. Many of your greatest earthquakes and disasters of every description have been forecasted by these valuable prophets. Many men of state have kept a sensitive close at hand, and through the advice of such has the important affairs of many a nation hung. There is a certain phase of mediumship possessed by but very few, in which the possessor is able at will to grasp in his naked hands a bar of red-hot iron, without hurt or harm in any way. This explanation will take away some of the mystery of it. When a medium for this phase of manifestation wishes to perform his almost mystical wonders, he instantly fixes his thought on a strong band of spirits which are invoked by him, and in the harmony of their thought and common natures, they are able to form a strong spiritual battery to use something similar to a wall, and then they place between their medium's hands and the red-hot iron a veil of radiant matter which not only protects his hands from all harm but strengthens him and quickens all his faculties, and many repetitions of this feat only makes him much more physically and mentally powerful. But strange as it may seem, more especially mediums of this phase are naturally mentally weak and physically strong and rugged. They usually have no refined tastes whatever, are not attracted by the beautiful, are satisfied with a very little in life, and are somewhat lazy. In short, they are dolts. On the other hand, there is a class of mediums who live and move entirely in the ethereal, the beautiful, the mystical, the purely ideal. These are the people of earth who move among their kind with majestic tread, daily sacrifice and kindness, and with the saintly countenances of the saints of old. Their material as well as their spiritual lives are blessed with almost constant revelations of spirit. They are ever fair and charitable to all humanity. Self-sacrifice is their first virtue among many. There are some physical mediums who are in trance condition so much of their lives that when they are normal, their manners are very eccentric, and they give up their individuality so much that at last they lose the charm of it entirely. But each has a specific work to perform, a mission to accomplish, and they alone are able to do these labors. As much as they are criticized by the cold and cruel hearts of the worldly-minded, yet if they were entirely swept away, what would the heart of sorrowing humanity do without them? They are God's messengers to a sorrowful world to bring light where there is darkness, joy in place of sadness, happiness to fill full the heart which was void. Spiritual nature. Robert Fulton. Friends, do not go through your world scattering groans and sighs and whines, and bewailings on every side. Carry with you joy and smiles and sunshine. Do not let raspings and irritations of your world rob you of the bright and cheerful side of your life. You may use sorrow when it inspires you with a tender and all-embracing sympathy with your fellow sufferers. Suffering borne and uncomplainingly endured so purifies and enriches the spiritual nature as to render you true interpreters of the profound mystery of the incarnation of the soul. You may think you are profoundly versed in all philosophy, and yet when spiritualism is mentioned, it staggers you. Few people have learned to use their own thinking faculties, but allowed others to think for them in a matter of religion. When you deny the right that has been given you by your all-wise teacher and leader, you abuse yourself by allowing others to think for you. If you use your own reasoning faculties in other lines, why not use them in spiritual matters as well? We don't ask you to accept spiritualism unless it appeals to your inner consciousness. If mathematics is true, then spiritual manifestations are true, because the proof that it claims can be demonstrated. Then to assert that mathematics is not true, and is not a fact, because you are not versed in that branch, is preposterous. Now, friends, study and investigate this matter as you would steam. Someone might ask you the question, is genuine steam visible or not visible? What would you answer? You, not having investigated it or studied on that line, would say in my inexperience, or lack of investigation, that steam was visible. No, my friends, genuine steam is not visible, for you cannot see it. It is in darkness and invisible to your material condition, But you see condensed steam, that is, not genuine steam. You see the wonderful manifestation of genuine steam as it propels the massive iron horse over your country. Truth. T. J. Hoy. Dear friends of Earth, spiritualism is a religion for the fair-minded. It unfolds the truth in full. It is larger than any of your means of measurement, greater than all your definitions. It gives you an assurance and hope that life has an everlasting and endless existence as you face forward into truth. It gives you the right and the best that is coming to you. This means to make the best out of Earth life and rational development, to accept the universe as part of life and growth, to believe that the highest hopes that have thrilled the breasts of men, hopes for freedom, justice, love and right, hopes for a better and nobler world and a diviner purpose that run through all time. The truth for the fair-minded and honest ones holds that it is better to spend your days seeking out and enlarging your conception of it, and clearing away the ignorance and superstitions that seem far off, faint and dim, than to wear your life and energy away in following the footsteps of your ancestors of long ago. If you will find the divine light of all light, it will be in the living present and the divine future, rather than in the dead past. As truth plants its feet on ascertained facts, it can conceive of no conflict between truth in one form, and truth in another. But faith would rather be lost in reverencing the fact, than saved by some contact of credence in a pious fiction. There is no short and narrow road to truth. A religion that is afraid of facts results in a character without stability because based on untruth, on conjecture, or on deceit, but a religion that will point out the way of truth, and light, and make you better men and women, don't you think, my friends, that it is good enough to live by and die by? This is the truth of spiritualism, pure and simple. To the traveler on his way, comes, to a sense of fellowship with all who have lived this truth. A consciousness of the homeward march into a right living, into a richer world, a nobler heaven than earth. The way has more light before than behind, and the best is yet to come. Here is a truth worthwhile to know that is moving you all, working through you all. The great spirit of life and truth that which leads you all into clear views of truth, better knowledge of the ways of life, clearer visions of faces of one another. Deeper love for one another and nobler living until you shall cross into the valley of the shadow of death where you are born to a new life. We wish you to know that there is a world of orderly progress, that here all things work together for the good of all, not for petty prizes of the present alone, to be confident that your living is a highway and not a fool's dream. The God of Nature. Dr. Reed. Friends, you can safely assume that the God of Nature who gave you existence, who gave you such exalted rank in the scale of intelligent beings and bestowed upon you such wonderful powers, designed you for a noble destiny, and a mission for you to fulfill, corresponding to the powers bestowed upon you, a work for you to do that is commensurate with your capacities, opportunities and facilities. To mortal beings constituted as you are, what can be more afflicting than to witness the expiring struggles of those you love? To see the eye become dim and glassy, and the face ghastly and pale in death, is under any circumstances, the greatest calamity that can afflict the human race. When death invades your family circle, you have the consolation of knowing that they don't die, but still live on and on for ages. Where is there another doctrine that can bring consolation to the sorrowing heart? When the parents who watched over you in the helpless hours of infancy, passed down into the valley of the shadow of death, when the wife of your bosom faded away under power of disease, until cold in death you laid her away beneath the clods of earth, when the husband of your choice was stricken down in the bloom of life, and left you alone to toil in all the woes of widowhood, when that little prattler upon whose fair brow you so often imprinted the kiss of paternal affections, wilted like a rosebud, plucked from its parent stem, and the gloomy grave closed its mouth on all that seemed worth living for, you have the consolation that there is no death. The God of Nature never intended for its children of Earth to remain in ignorance and superstition as to a future life. As you stand by the grave of loved ones now sleeping in death, you turn and ask with aching heart, do they live and shall I see them again? Is it well with the lost but loved ones of my heart? But no kind response from the minister, only "it is well," was heard in reply. Her lips were sealed in silence as mournfully she turned away and left you alone in your sorrow. You then turned to infidelity, and at the boasted shrine of reason asked the startling question, "If a man die, shall he live again?" But you found in infidelity the answer, "Number death is an eternal sleep." Overwhelmed with grief and sorrow, you were about sinking in despair, when a being came to you, and while supporting you with one hand, and wiping away your tears with the other, she whispered in your ear in sweet tones, "Your loved ones still live, and the hour is coming, when you shall hear the voice of those you once loved, and tell you of their beautiful home." Do you think that the God of nature, who has planned man's existence on earth so perfectly and obediently to the law of nature, will deprive his children of earth of ever meeting those who have crossed to the great beyond? No, my friends, nature has made no such mistake. If it is possible for you to exist in a material form, which you know it is, then it must be possible for you to exist in a spiritual form, for one is no more difficult than the other to accomplish. So my friends, how are you going to deny this fact? To deny it would be to deny your own existence, and that you cannot do, unless you are bereft of all sense, dormant faculties. Professor Denton, you say that you must make the most of life, to seize opportunities when they come, that all your faculties should be trained. Every human being is born into your world, with many parts to be utilized along certain lines. But the trouble with most people is that they allow many of these God-given gifts to lie dormant, and only think of cultivating those which they imagine absolutely necessary to gain a mere livelihood. A man may be an adept in farming, yet have hidden and untrained faculties, which might enable him to grace the chair of a university, or soar to the highest pinnacles of statesmanship. Most of the great men of your world and those over here were poor boys, and had they neglected the God-given gifts that were given them from this side of life and were theirs, would have remained poor and unknown all through life, became great by the due development and culture of their faculties. Thousands of cases might be cited of men who commenced life in one direction and apparently with only one asset in the way of talent, but who discovered the richness of their birthright in time and realized it in their progress. Some possess talent for mediumship but never unfold it, and they go through life like a mariner cast adrift on the ocean with but one oar to propel and guide his boat. If he loses the oar, he is tossed about the prey of the winds and waves. With two oars he could have reached land safely. The man who is a millionaire of today will not be the millionaire in the spirit world, but will be a pauper. Bankers have had to leave their counting houses, merchants their desks, artists their easels and preachers their pulpits. Those who had trained all of their faculties were at no loss for a living, but the ones who had not cultivated their faculties were washed on the shores of oblivion. Faculties, when not brought into play, are as the undeveloped dwarf form and practically of no service. Experience and use strengthen, develop and confer stamina and resisting powers. Results can only be accomplished through experience and use. The best unfolded and developed medium is able to read at a glance much that the ordinary individual would take years to grasp, yet many of some commonplace persons may possess the same discerning faculties, only that they are dormant. The painter distinguishes shades and colors which appear but a blurred mass to the ordinary observer, the poet can scan lines of beauty where all is dull and prosaic to him whose perceptive reasoning has not been refined or developed to distinguish the gold from the dross. A child may be born with natural gifts, but they will never blossom and ripen into a full fruition unless they are tended and cared for. Experience is the sunshine that develops them and causes them to come to a full realization. Experience, as its name signifies, is a bringing forth of all that is within you to serve the purpose of it is aimed for. Experience is manifold, a complete educator, and deals with body and spirit, and brings forth the best attributes in life. The schools of the college do not bring out man's dormant faculties. The field of experience is as boundless as the universe, and only through the spiritual laws can you hope to reach this aim. Gather into your storehouse what will prove useful and lasting, what will sustain you in the combat of life and make you a brave and worthy man. Subconscious mind. Michael Faraday. You will all realize that much of your valuable information and experience comes when the active mind is passive or asleep, or as it were, when your waking faculties are closed in with the walls of slumber. Some authorities will tell you that dreams are all nothing but astral visions or visitations, but it has been my experience to learn that only a part of them are such. Many things, persons and places will be visited by you in your sleeping hours, and these happenings are real, just as the occurrences of your waking state, only it is your astral body that carries you to these places in sleep, as your material body in the moments of wakefulness. Oftentimes the mind in sleep will experience, and the eye will see a panorama of visions, will visit certain friends, and this is invariably the action of the subconscious mind when these appearances are very swift and not very clearly defined. When there is a crowd of pictures going continually before you, and you go very swiftly and without reason to places of great distance, it is usually the action again of the subconscious mind. There are times when the subconscious mind acts on various thoughts of yours even in the waking state. There are also numbers of persons who even use the subconscious mind more than the commonly conscious. The souls of these individuals are more or less inspired, as they are more often artists of some distinction. They are always called the dreamers of the world by their fellows. The look of the distant soul fire is shining gloriously in their eyes. All their ideas are born through the ideal, while the prosaic mind only forms its ideas through clear-eyed reason. The subconscious mind dreams dreams which are never realized. Hypnotic demonstration must always act upon the subconscious mind, and most of the so-called wonders of hypnosis are simply the actions of the subconscious mind moved by the operator. Persons who are much given to somnambulism develop a certain lively action of the subconscious mind, and often their movements are foolish and aimless, but at times they display a great amount of speed and intelligence. Somnambulism is a phase of the subconscious mind's action that has been studied by many of the best scientific men in your world for many years. But aside from the mental demonstration of the subconscious mind, we can find no physical demonstration whatever. Much of the phenomena of spiritualism is said to be due to the subconscious mind, but if this is true, then all the phenomena of nature are caused by mind action simply. This, my friends, you will have to deny, and as the materialization of nature's garden is acted upon by the same laws as form or spirit materialization, then you will have to acknowledge that the subconscious mind has nothing whatever to do with the phenomena of spiritualism. Any result given by action of this mind force must first be conceived in the mentality and then generated into action when the subject is somewhat in an unconscious condition. The phenomena of spiritualism come from the elements acted upon by the intelligence of departed human beings. There is nothing more impossible than to suppose the action of mind alone is responsible. To suppose for one instant that the subconscious mind is in any way responsible for any class of physical or spiritual manifestation, is to suppose an impossibility. And those authors who have written and likewise spoken so much on the subject, claiming the subconscious mind as the true hypothesis for such manifestation, are only making excuses to clear away the right definition of a subject upon which they are woefully ignorant. You can gaze around you every day and witness the various materializations of nature, the flowers, the trees, the oceans thundering forth their mighty voices, the mountains arising in all their varied majesty, and the tiny rivulet that winds its peaceful way through pleasant valleys of gentleness and plenty. Watch the expression of all the glorious flowers and see if you can notice any workings there of the subconscious mind of man that are responsible for all of this life and beauty. Remember and always keep in mind that all materialization can but occur on the same law precisely, and so the same father-mother which is building the materialization of nature for you of earth to enjoy, so does the father-mother build the materialization of spirits and other manifestation, to enlighten you of the darkness of earth. We have oftentimes heard many persons on attending seances of any kind say, "Oh, well, it might have been the subconscious mind which caused those forms to float before us as our power of thought might have caused that moving panorama of faces and forms to pass before us, that was all I think, yet it is the most wonderful thing I ever saw. Oh, the mind of man in all its vanity and folly, that it is at once more satisfied with a meaningless, soulless form thrown on the wall as the reflection of a moving picture than with the truth and blessed knowledge that these wonderful visitors are really in evidence to prove to us the existence of another life. They would much prefer any excuse that they might flee the further from the truth. Then there are some, indeed, who wish to sound very learned in the ears of their hearers when they prate impossibilities of the much-worn subconscious mind. They probably believe that only a few people have ever heard of the subconscious mind, and they will straightway enlighten them then. Too, they sometimes think they will astound their hearers with their superior wisdom and explanations, and are vainglorious enough to feel proud of mystifying a few, if convincing none. My friends, in all earnestness and sincerity, you should all learn early in life to be justly proud only of a real truth, however simple it may be, for it is only the truth and simplicity of a thing which makes that thing cognizable. To know the real power of the so-called subconscious mind is valuable, but to overestimate it is folly, nothing short of childishness. We have now, however, some young authors who are coming up swiftly in the world who will set the people right on a great many things, for your present age on earth is one of righteousness and reason, veracity and truth, and the time is present when the people will no longer take the hollow, empty but high-sounding excuse for a thing, but will clamor until they get that thing in all its truth. Religion of today and the past. DeWitt Talmage. Do you know that half of your population is not religiously inclined? They do not go to church, they have nothing to do with preachers except for weddings, funerals, etc., etc., and they carry on no religious conversation, but indulge in witticism about religion, churches, the Bible and preachers. It seems that the whole spirit of the ages turned away from their early teachings and turned to the earthly things as never before in the history of your world. The world is indeed worldly. This apparently religious lag may be explained by what we might call tired. There seems to have been an idea among the people that religion can be bought. In some places religion has become a school affair. A boy at the age of 15 or 16 has settled all of the high, deep and difficult problems, and is either done with them, or bored with them. Religion has been made too much a doctrine. You hold it true, and you have religion, or you hold spiritualism to be true, then you cast religion aside. Religion has been a thing of compulsion to so many men. They tell you you must have religion and of a certain brand, otherwise you are a bad man and will be lost forever. As a matter, religion is looked upon by multitudes as a faith and superstition. And therefore, men are glad that they need no longer be troubled with religion. The kind of religion men need is one that will brighten their souls and make them better men in your world and in the spirit world. Do you know, friends, that physical life is short at best, and in that short space of time you know not where you are drifting? Some have a hope that there is a future, but they are not sure as to what the future is. Your preacher tells you there is a God, and that there is a heaven and a hell. How does he know? He has never been there and returned to tell worshippers of its condition over there. It is only a speculation with him, not knowledge, as it is with the spiritualists. The spiritualists don't ask you to believe what they say, but ask you to investigate and know for yourselves. This is the kind of religion the world needs. Egotism. Professor Huxley. Egotism is a quality that has so largely enveloped the world of humanity that its grasp at the light of truth in any form has been overshadowed in their eyes. Have you of this circle ever witnessed individuals who were so constantly thrusting their ideas and opinions on others, trying to show the world the only way to do things? Many of the great reformers lost the heart of their God-given mission by being overtaken by egotism, that fire of selfishness which consumes and scorches to death all whom it touches. Some of the brightest brains on your earth have been so dwarfed and cramped by this monster that their owners but appeared as insipid and non-progressive barnacles that are always found clinging so closely around the same old log, that people lose sight of them altogether after a while. These people sometimes get great conceptions and many true conceptions, but valuing these conceptions so highly, They after a while get to believing that they are the sole possessors of them, and so they go out to teach the ignorant in a majesty of spiteful impatience at those who do not listen, and think them so very dull of comprehension that they are unable to see the wonderful points of scientific truths that they are trying so hard to put before them, when the real reason is that many times their listeners have not been overtaken with the disease of egotism, and have progressed so much farther along the same lines than their would-be instructor, that the lessons so long ago learned become irksome to listen to, over so many times again. You must all learn that each individual in life is but a student, and must learn the best lessons of life through his own personal experience, who is his wisest tutor at all times and in all places, and that as each personal being has different qualities and methods of understanding, that it becomes highly necessary for each one to learn the lesson, the same identical lesson in his own particular way. This you cannot change. And you can no more alter any of these laws than you can alter the great dome of heaven. And the liberal-minded will agree that as all personal beings being organized just a little differently, will naturally see scientific problems or any other matters both great and small, through glasses of a little different shade. But what matters it if we all love and reverence the same God if we chance to see him differently and call him by different names? Our methods of understanding literally amount to nothing so long as we are hand in hand with the truth of God. But the unwearied attempts of so many so-called great thinkers who are only endeavoring to make the people see a truth through their eyes and positively know others, are the egotists who will always have the same complaint, that the people are turning from their teaching instead of drawing near to it. If there is one thing more than another, that will keep the ignorant in darkness, it is the persistent preaching of the word egotist. In all things, and to all people, teach your hearts to be merciful, kind and true. There is always a great deal more accomplished by the gentle and patient teaching of the real reformers who are willing to set a personal example of near perfection in place of so much wordy and worthless preaching. Whenever an individual thinks to turn all the people's minds in the channel of his own way of thinking simply by telling them repeatedly that they must believe as he does or they will believe wrong, he is not only disgusting them and hurting the much-needed progression, but he is so dwarfing his own powers of intelligence and attraction that after a little while the people get to know him and shun him as a real bore. God has given these bright minds inspiration and steady brilliance and also guards them daily with glorious bands of spirit messengers, to help them carry on a much needed reform and teaching, and not indeed to waste their precious gifts in the ingression of vulgar selfhood. In all things be generous, it will not cost you any more, but will eternally build for you in the heavens. The man who is selfish never enjoys his gains although he may make money in a material way. For he is never satiated, and gaining becomes as a fever, a mania, and he loses all that he really has. He has never gained enough but will keep right on gaining until he falls to his death, a worthless egotist who has just by a hair, missed passing through that awful of all deaths, the soul's death. The soul can never die, but it can suffer such shocks and tortures that it were worse than death. For it is still barely alive and can feel even though its feeling is that of a sickly invalid. All egotists have the same disease, no matter in what lines or what phases of life their egotism may plant them. We want you to so forget self in the making of others' happiness that you will, so truly find your own as to be forever contented, and live daily with the dove of peace on your faces, the milk of human kindness in your smile and the God-given generosity in your purses and ready for those in need. In this line of development you will possess a certain unfoldment that will give you the dignity of bearing, the righteous appreciation of self and the true justice of thought towards your fellow men. Ah, there are flowers blooming all along the way of this road of perfect peace where no malice is, neither is the hate. Where the interests are not contained in the mere satisfaction of personal selfhood, but where the hearts of humanity beat as one mighty vibration, all in all, and together. This situation will come to your world, but you yourselves will have to be the instruments through which it will be positively manifested. In all things be generous and know once and for all that your brother and sister mortals possess some little intellectuality as well as you. Appendix: A statement of the manner in which the dawn of another life was produced. This is to explain how it was done. The medium, W. W.